difficult and also philosophical question.
My pleasure.
I hope that the listeners have gotten their answer, and we hope that this answer will help us to seek nearness towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Until next time, fi amanillah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن.
Communique.
Jean-Luc Brunel, a famous French model scout and fashion industry figure, has been found dead in his prison cell in what appears to be a suicide. Brunel was a close associate of infamous billionaire and sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, who is also supposed to have hung himself in his cell. We've heard about Epstein and the sex trafficking and the victims who've come forward, but why has the media said nothing about the blackmailing aspect that Epstein and his close associate Ghislaine Maxwell were using underage girls to gather dirt on politicians so they could blackmail them? And what about their relationship to Israel's intelligence service, the Mossad? Today, we're going to try and answer these questions and look at the saga a little more carefully. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. On Saturday, February 19th, 2022, Jean-Luc Brunel, a prominent French model scout, was found dead in his cell in La Santé prison in what has been called a suicide. Now, you might be wondering, why should this be of any particular interest? Because Brunel was not just a big figure in the fashion industry, he was also a close associate of billionaire sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Brunel stands accused of sexual assault and having partaken in alleged sex trafficking ring run by Epstein. To be frank, he was providing young girls to Epstein for sex. And for lack of a better word, he was a pimp. Now, according to one of the victims, Virginia Gouffray, Epstein admitted to her that he had, quote, slept with over 1,000 of Brunel's girls. And it was from Virginia Gouffray's civil suit against Epstein's close associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, that we know of Brunel's name as well. And this is one day that we see these court documents unsealed, one day before Jeffrey Epstein's death. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was known for living a lavish life and always inviting very prominent figures like actors and high-level politicians and businessmen to fly around with him on his private jet. And so Jeffrey Epstein would go and invite these people to his private islands, right, where they would have intercourse with underage girls that he had trafficked through his associates, such as Maxwell or Brunel, who were running these fashion and model agencies where they would get these girls from. And so following the revelations of this scandal, you know, people are starting to wonder, are these prominent figures, the politicians, the actors, all of these people we see in the photographs with Epstein, did they also participate in this sex trafficking ring? Because many of their names appear on the flight logs of Jeffrey Epstein's private jets. One of those names is, of course, Jean-Luc Brunel. The flight logs list him as a passenger 25 times on Epstein's private plane. And so who exactly was Jeffrey Epstein, the real Jeffrey Epstein? And why are there so many secrets surrounding this whole case? Now, back in 2008, Epstein pleaded guilty for soliciting a minor for prostitution. He served 13 months in jail, but unlike most prisoners who have to stay in prison, Epstein was given the luxury of being able to work out of his office 6 days a week. Now, one of the women who has come forward to accuse Epstein of sexual assault is Maria Farmer. When Maria Farmer was just a young art student, Epstein bought one of her paintings. She was recruited to work as his art advisor. And Farmer claims that Epstein showed her an entire system of secret video surveillance that he had set up inside his property with cameras in the bedrooms and the toilets. Now, Farmer was the first victim to officially report Epstein's behavior and abuse to the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the FBI. However, at the time, you know, the authorities just didn't seem to take her accusations seriously, and there was no investigation. When Ghislaine Maxwell found out that Farmer had paid a visit to the FBI, she began threatening her with physical violence.
What sort of threats has she made against you?
Originally, it started with things like, I'm going to burn your art, and then I'm going to burn your career, and then I'm going to burn you and the house you live in. And then it was, oh, be careful crossing a street. You know, you can get shot in the back of the head. You know, they were threats against my life. And I told the FBI this.
It wasn't just Maxwell, Brunel, and Epstein doing this. The victims have also accused many high-level officials, billionaires, professors, even the British royal family, Prince Andrew, of having partaken in this sex trafficking. Epstein provided them with young girls, which they abused. Now, earlier, I talked about the flight logs and how Brunel's name appears there. But you might be more familiar with former U.S. President Bill Clinton or Donald Trump, whose names appear multiple times on Jeffrey Epstein's flight logs. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was finally arrested on July 6, 2019, on federal charges for sex trafficking minors, and he pleaded not guilty. They then put Epstein in New York City's Metropolitan Correctional Center, also known as MCC, and they put him on suicide watch because he reportedly tried to take his own life. Now, when you're put under suicide watch, that means you're under 24/7 surveillance. But after an assessment by a high-level psychologist, Epstein was taken out of suicide watch, and they put him instead in a special housing unit, or an SHU. And so barely a month after his arrest, on August 10th at 6:30 a.m., Jeffrey Epstein is found dead in his cell by apparent suicide. And it turns out that the guards had fallen asleep and there's no camera footage. And with Brunel's suicide, the same thing. There's no camera footage. The cameras were not working. Now, look, there are many theories floating out there about Epstein's death, specifically because a lot of things don't add up. And even then, Attorney General William Barr, he himself admitted to some, quote, serious irregularities. There are also numerous suicide prevention experts who also expressed serious concern. Senior staff counsel with the National Prison Project of the American Civil Liberties Union, Eric Balaban, raised questions as to why Epstein's life was risked by putting him in this restrictive special housing unit, or SHU, specifically when he had shown suicidal tendencies. According to him, an SHU is just not an appropriate thing for someone who's shown recent suicidal tendencies. Now, I can recall as I was attending the extradition hearing of Julian Assange, one of the people testifying was none other than Maureen Baird. Maureen Baird is the former warden of that very prison, MCC, where Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. And she spoke about the prison conditions there, specifically about pretrial SAMs. However, she did note one thing, that Jeffrey Epstein was the first person to kill themselves at MCC since 2013. Now, to be honest, I cannot know how, you know, for sure how Jeffrey Epstein died, whether he simply decided to end his life because of all the pressure from the trial and the public exposure and the lengthy sentence awaiting him, or whether he was killed because he was too dangerous and the elites wanted to tie up some loose ends. But let me tell you something that we can verify. This wasn't the first time Jeffrey Epstein was in jail. As we were saying earlier, he was arrested in 2007. But how come he got off so easily? Well, it turns out that Alexander Acosta was the Miami Attorney General at the time. And while he was being interviewed a couple of years later for the position of Labor Secretary by Donald Trump's transition team, Acosta revealed that, quote, "I was told Epstein belonged to intelligence and to leave it alone." And now you see why he cut Jeffrey Epstein a non-prosecution plea deal. If all of this wasn't enough, you know, all of this horrible sex trafficking, it also seems that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and Jean-Luc Brunel had ties to at least Israeli intelligence, if not also American intelligence. You know, Epstein had been known to brag about working for the Mossad, and Acosta just gives him a slap on the wrist because he knows that he's working with intelligence. Now, Epstein's longtime partner, Ghislaine Maxwell, her father, Robert Maxwell, is known to have been both a KGB and Mossad agent. You see, Robert Maxwell was a very, very famous media tycoon who owned 6 national newspapers in the UK. He also famously stole around £500 million from his own workers' pension funds. Now, journalist Whitney Webb, who's done fantastic work on Epstein, she's written extensively about Robert Maxwell's exploits as a Mossad agent in great detail. At one point, for example, Robert Maxwell acquired a company called Information on Demand, which was a front. It was a cutout for the Mossad. And they sold an Israeli piece of software called Promise, right? And this software was sold to governments around the world. And it had a back door inside it, allowing the Israelis to penetrate and spy on the very clients they had sold it to. So Robert Maxwell even sold Promise, this software, to a Los Angeles-based firm called Sandia National Laboratories, which provided Israeli intelligence with direct access to the core of the U.S. nuclear weapons program and nuclear weapons technology. And speaking of nuclear technology, it's also believed that Robert Maxwell is the one who tipped off the Israeli embassy in London about the Israeli nuclear scientist Mordechai Vanunu, after Vanunu had divulged the existence of Israel's nuclear program to the press. Right, Vanunu was subsequently kidnapped in Rome. They flew him to Israel and then sentenced him to almost 2 decades in prison. And when the issue of Robert Maxwell being a Mossad spy was brought up, because you have to keep in mind, he was also a member of parliament in the UK, so this was quite the scandal. And when this was brought up, no one would print it because the press feared being hit with a libel suit, right? So instead, what happened is George Galloway and Rupert Allison, who were both MPs at the time, they went and raised this issue in the House of Commons, exposing Robert Maxwell as a Mossad spy. And by extension, this allowed the British press to start printing about it without fear of reprisal or fear of being sued by Maxwell and his lawyers. And just a few weeks later, mysteriously, Maxwell died after allegedly falling off of his yacht. He was buried. He was buried with full honors at the Mount of Olives. And you know who attended his funeral? The Israeli Prime Minister and President, and at least 6 former and serving heads of the Mossad. Maybe that will give you an idea about how important he was for the Israelis, that all of these figures are attending his funeral. And so that's Ghislaine Maxwell's father, right? But if you thought the only connection here to the Mossad was her father, well, you'd better think again. Journalist Jeff Shalev conducted an interview in 2019 with an individual named Ari Ben Menashe. Ben Menashe was a, quote, Israeli consultant and former arms dealer who also served as a senior executive for Israel's Directorate of Military Intelligence from 1977 to 1987. So this puts Ben Menashe in a unique position to divulge about Epstein and also Maxwell, because he met them both 40 years ago when he was working for Israel alongside Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell. And so in this interview, Ben Menashe is asked, quote, "You spoke about Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell as being part of Israeli military intelligence. Do you know specifically which unit?" Ben Menashe replies that, quote, "Because of Robert Maxwell, they worked directly with military intelligence. I don't know who they answer to." The interviewer then continues, would you say that she was an agent as well and in military intelligence as well? Ben Menashe says yes, yes to both. And so Ben Menashe also makes another thing very clear, that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, the entire point of their sex trafficking operation was to, quote, blackmail American and other political figures by specifically seeking out underage girls for their friends. And as for Jean-Luc Brunel, he used his modeling agency to traffic girls to Epstein, right? And unsurprisingly, he had an office in where? Tel Aviv, right? An office in Tel Aviv as part of his modeling agency with Epstein. And so here in this picture, you can see Brunel wearing a cap that reads Israel Army. Again, that's perhaps not the most incriminating thing, but do keep it in mind. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Joining me is Graham Elwood. He's an American comedian, podcaster, and writer. He hosts a progressive YouTube show and podcast called The Political Vigilante. He's also the co-host of Government Secrets with Lee Camp. Graham has been covering the Jeffrey Epstein saga for several years now, which even resulted in his YouTube channel being demonetized. Graham, could you maybe just to start off, give us a very brief overview of the Epstein case in the simplest terms so anyone can get it?
I have a whole Epstein playlist on my YouTube channel. And one of the most critical interviews I would ask people to watch is where I interview a former child crimes investigator, my friend Eric Oldenburg, who was on the Phoenix Police Department for 24 years. And he investigated online, basically, child trafficking and child pornography and pretty gnarly stuff. And I mean, he said, you know, anyone can be a pedophile, any socioeconomic status, any ethnicity, any gender, any sexual orientation. Sexual orientation doesn't even necessarily correlate. He said, but the people that can get away with it the most are the wealthy and most powerful. And that's what the Epstein case is. If you want to understand how the ruling elites operate, start paying attention to the Epstein case, because you've got, in the intelligence community, specifically CIA and Mossad, are their handprints are all over this. And, you know, like with these examples, just some basic stuff. So when Epstein was arrested in West Palm Beach, Florida in 2008, 2009 in that area, Acosta was the prosecutor, and he was told to... Epstein was a CIA asset and to back off. And that's why he gave him a very lenient case, a charge. Basically, he got to leave his prison every day and fly around and literally traffic and abuse girls.
And when you mention powerful people and the ruling elites, you know, you have a lot of pictures, photographs of celebrities and very rich and important personalities that have photographed with Epstein or Maxwell. And we've also heard of this black book full of names. Could you basically tell us what that is and why we see so many important people photographed with Epstein and people in his entourage?
One of the things, and this has been confirmed in other places, one of the things Epstein would do, he'd have these parties with the wealthiest, most powerful people in the world. Billionaires, politicians, I mean, presidents, several different royal families, including the Saudis and the British royal family. And so this powerful person would come in. One of Epstein's butlers would say, hey, would you like a massage from a beautiful young woman? The guy would say yes. And it would be, they'd have sex and it would be a child. And they'd videotape it. Then Epstein would say, well, now I've got evidence of you having sex with a child. And they would then invest in Epstein's. He had some like fake hedge fund. So this is one of the ways Epstein got power. And this is why the intelligence community went, oh, this is an asset, because now we can use these videotapes as leverage. So what is so significant here, Richard, is when Epstein was arrested in July of 2019, we saw the video and the footage of the guys in the FBI coats dragging out, you know, not dragging, but like wheeling out on dolly trucks, boxes of photos, videos, hard drives, all this stuff. None of it. We have seen any of it. So what we have seen is just these little snippets. We've seen like the photos you've seen online. We've seen the flight logs. And I think the flight logs are very critical as well. They show stuff like Bill Clinton on his plane 26 times, Hillary on his plane two times. Trump was originally thought to only be on one time, but more flight logs were released at the end of December during the Maxwell trial, showing Trump was actually on five times. So to your question here, where is that information? Well, that is the reason why this stuff is getting swept under the rug, because the richest, most powerful people are on video. So that's why Jean-Luc Brunel is dead, is because he probably wouldn't play ball or had information or threatened to make a deal with the prosecutor saying, I'll give you these videotapes, give me a lighter sentence. And then all of a sudden, oh, wow, he's so distraught, he's going to hang himself. It's believed that Maxwell has so much information, and she's ruthless. She plays hardball, that she has, you know, I don't know, some people will call it like whatever you are, like a kill switch, basically. My belief is, Ghislaine Maxwell said, if I go down, you
sorry
go
to cut
down.
You off. I was going to ask you about the Maxwell trial, about Ghislaine Maxwell. I mean, how does she tie into Epstein? What's the relationship, and why is she so important to this case? And what did you make of the trial that took place a few months ago?
We'll call her socialite, Epstein's gal pal, maybe even a recruiter. But according to several Epstein victims, including Virginia Roberts Giuffre and Maria Farmer and Maria Farmer's sister, Annie Farmer, she participated. So she's a pedophile. Like, let's be real clear here. And the media will not call Ghislaine Maxwell a pedophile. She is a pedophile and a sex trafficker. And all the women that survived said Maxwell treated them horribly. She treated them like trash.
Well, I mean, speaking of these political connections, one thing that I was really interested in asking you is that, you know, the connections to the Mossad, because you mentioned it briefly at the beginning. If I recall correctly, Brunel, he had one of these modeling agency offices in Tel Aviv, right? And we've heard many times that Maxwell is connected to the Mossad. Could you explain what that connection is and how this relates to the intelligence, specifically U.S. and Israeli?
Maxwell's father was a Mossad agent, and he had a mysterious death, jumped off a boat or some very sort of odd, mysterious death. So you have that. Then you have, as I stated earlier, Acosta said at an interview in 2009 that he was told to go easy on the prosecution of Epstein in Florida because he was this is Acosta's words, not mine, a quote, CIA asset, right? And then you have, again, John Kiriakou said this in my interview with him, and I asked him about the CIA. I said, does the CIA condone getting children for pedophiles? He goes, no, but if you went, I'm going to get a child for this pedophile, because if I get him children, then we can leverage that and use him as an asset. The CIA would go, okay, because they just want the leverage and the intel. And then seeing how, again, going back to Epstein's like fake hedge fund, these guys would donate money to it. And I'm blanking on the names. There was another big hedge fund guy. I can't keep track of all their names, but he donated or invested a lot of money with Epstein. And then women have spoken out against him. So what intelligence is doing, they needed people like Epstein to help them get leverage on all of these people. And they were like, look, Epstein, we'll let him have, you know, do whatever he wants on his plane and on his island, as long as he keeps feeding us intel. Until he kept getting, I think Epstein was one of these guys that was so egregious with it that then he became a problem and they got rid of him. From the intelligence standpoint, if they've got video of somebody or some evidence, then that person's easy to control. If that person is found guilty and goes to prison, they don't have them. That person has no more power. They have no more leverage. So they need these key people to get all this stuff done. and they've got, you know, leverage on, you know, the Saudi royal family. They've got, and, you know, as I said, John Kiriakou said, this feels like the Israelis. He felt like Mossad, his first gut instinct as a former CIA operative was that Mossad was involved in Epstein's death. This all feels very coordinated and maneuvered by those two intelligence agencies.
There is one really important aspect, though, that the victims themselves have underscored, which is that Jeffrey Epstein used these girls to blackmail powerful people. And so, yes, Epstein and Ghislaine are very obviously depraved individuals who preyed on others. But they also did this to get dirt on the wealthy, on politicians, on businessmen, and anyone that mattered. And they did this in service of Israeli intelligence. They did this at the behest of the Mossad. And again, that's not only speculation. This is now confirmed. It's on the record, confirmed by former Israeli intelligence officials, as we were just going through. And so in addition to all of the already vile, deplorable sexual assaults that this entire saga is mired with, we can see now that there is very clearly a political dimension to it as well. And the fact that the media won't talk about this and never tackle this angle, it really speaks volumes, right? Why do they refuse to talk about this? And how come, despite unsealing so many documents, the courts still continue to keep many of them under wraps? What are they hiding from us exactly? And what could be the other dark secrets in the spy world that we're yet to discover? Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Bye-bye. We congratulate all Iranians and Persian-speaking peoples of the world on the occasion of Nowruz.
In the limelight.
Measured by the value of the wages that workers take home, which this board regards as the most important metric for assessing the health of America's economy, President Biden's first year in office was not a very good year. The article you're about to hear has been published in the opinion section of the New York Times. It has been written by the paper's editorial board. The piece is titled, President Biden's Economy is Failing the Big Mac Test. Measured by the value of the wages that workers take home, which this board regards as the most important metric for assessing the health of America's economy, President Biden's first year in office was not a very good year. The dollar figures on workers' paychecks rose handsomely over the past 12 months. But for most workers, that wasn't enough to keep pace with the highest inflation in several decades, which eroded the value of each of those dollars. The purchasing power of the average worker's weekly pay declined by 2.3% from December of 2020 to December of 2021. Data for the final 20 days of Joe Biden's first year in office is not available as yet, but is unlikely to improve that picture. Joe Biden inherited an economic crisis precipitated by the coronavirus pandemic, and his administration deserves credit for orchestrating a fiscal response on a scale commensurate with a nation's need. The outstanding achievement of Mr. Biden's first year in office was the passage of an economic aid package in March that shielded Americans from the economic effects of the pandemic and helped to deliver a faster recovery than in other developed nations. In simple terms, things could have been a lot worse. The Biden administration also has taken some significant steps to improve the nation's longer-term economic prospects, notably by pushing an infrastructure bill through Congress and by launching a revival of antitrust enforcement. In a late December tweet, Joe Biden quoted with evident approval an assessment that he had compiled the strongest first-year economic track record of any president in the last 50 years. The Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said on Friday, 21st of January, "By most traditional metrics, the pace of our current recovery has exceeded even the most optimistic expectations." But most Americans don't share the administration's sunny view of its economic record, and it is little mystery why. The average worker's paycheck doesn't buy as many hamburgers as it did last year. Using hamburgers to measure inflation is a twist on The Economist magazine's Big Mac Index, which tracks the price of the classic hamburger in different currencies. The government's Consumer Price Index, CPI, rose by 7% in 2021, the biggest jump since 1982. Joe Biden's approval rating remains low, and poll after poll finds that Americans are not pleased with his handling of the economy. Nearly two-thirds of the American public says the administration is insufficiently focused on inflation, according to a recent CBS News opinion poll. There are similar numbers in other recent polls. The nation's mood has soured, even as the economy has added more than 6 million jobs over the last year. For the core of the labour force, workers aged 25 to 54, employment recovered more quickly than in the prior three recessions, dating back to the 1990s. That's a big deal. Even when paychecks are losing value, it's better to get one. Low-wage workers have seen particularly strong wage growth. For workers in the bottom third of the wage distribution, Arin Rajit Dube, an economist at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, estimates that average wage gains have exceeded inflation. If inflation remains strong, however, the number of workers in that fortunate category is likely to shrink. And even for those workers, the pace of wage growth adjusted for inflation is weaker than it was in the 2 years before the pandemic. Economic output, or gross domestic product, GDP, has climbed above its pre-crisis level. Investors have reason to be happy too. The Standard & Poor's 500, a broad measure of the stock market, rose by 19.3% during Joe Biden's first year as president. The market's large losses this past week wiped out only a small portion of those gains. The White House finds itself in the position of a physician who has administered a successful course of treatment but who has neglected to prepare the patient for the side effects or to give the timeline for a full recovery. A lot of pain was averted, but it's hard to feel gratitude for things that didn't happen. The economic outlook is strong, but it's hard to feel gratitude for things that haven't happened yet. Right now, the pain of inflation is front and center for most Americans. No one is surprised when recessions deliver unpredictable disruptions. We're now being reminded that recoveries are messy. People are trying to buy more cars than are readily available. Diners are more eager than waiters to return to restaurants. The nation's cargo ports have been overwhelmed by a surge of imports. Joe Biden, however, has contributed to his own political woes. Through much of the fall, the president and other administration officials seem to be downplaying the dangers of inflation. Mr. Biden also continues to present the administration's longer-term economic initiatives, like antitrust enforcement and a push for childcare subsidies, as measures that would help to combat inflation. The effect of such policies would not be felt for some time, and Mr. Biden's insistence on this implausible narrative may be contributing to a sense that he's not taking inflation seriously. The administration has not taken action in some areas that could help to restrain inflation or mitigate its effects. The tariffs that Donald Trump imposed on Chinese imports remain in place. Legal immigration has continued to decline, worsening labor shortages. A one-year expansion of the child tax credit helped to reduce the share of American children living in poverty to the lowest level since the government began to keep records in the 1960s. But Democrats, unable to agree on the terms of a permanent expansion, have allowed the expanded benefits to expire, depriving millions of working families of much-needed help. Some of the president's critics assert that the United States missed the chance for a Goldilocks recovery, neither too cold nor too hot. They argue that a smaller dose of economic aid would have delivered growth without higher inflation. But European nations with generally administered proportionally smaller doses of aid are now experiencing both less inflation and slower recoveries. Critics also ought to keep in mind that not-so-distant past, in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis, the United States similarly delivered an inadequate dose of aid. Inflation remained quiescent, but that was little comfort to the millions who waited years to find work. The challenge now is to bring inflation back under control without undermining the economic recovery. The work will mostly be done by the U.S. Federal Reserve, not by Joe Biden or his administration. The role of presidents in shaping the nation's economic fortunes is generally overstated, but if the government can complete the work it has begun, the administration may yet deserve the victory lap that it is taking for successful stewardship of the nation's economy. The discomforting truth is that the United States last year faced a choice between a protracted period of economic pain and an economic recovery whose benefits are temporarily attenuated by high inflation. Joe Biden made the right choice, but it came at a real price, economically for the nation and politically for him.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, everyone.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Welcome, dear audience. This is Youth Station.
And you are listening to IRB English Radio. Well, in today's episode, we're going to discuss some very interesting stuff in here. And Brother Hassanain is my co-host.
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum assalam. This is going to be an interesting session with you.
Usually in our shows, we target the audience, the youth audience. So,
mm-hmm. Youth is in your heart. Everyone, please listen to us, no matter how old you are.
So, dear young people, let's talk about old people today. Let's talk about the adults, yes. Adults as in the elderly people. If you're annoyed or bothered by the constant advices of the old people or the elderly people, so this show is for you. stay with us.
Yes, we're going to talk a lot for you.
But we respect all the adults.
Yes, of course.
May Allah bless them all.
And help them to stop lecturing us.
Bad lectures, like, you know, the wrong lectures, not specifically yes. Every lecture.
Also, good lectures need to have a pattern. It does have a pattern.
Sister Asma, so are you annoyed by the advisors of the adults?
Of course. When I was younger, yes, a lot. Now, since I'm getting older...
You're trying to say that you yourself as an adult?
And right now?
Yeah.
I'm starting to enter adulthood.
Nah, so it means that you're in a stage where you annoy others.
Yes.
You annoy...
Since I have a younger sibling, then I think I have that role as well. Because he sometimes mentions that to me, that you're starting to lecture me and it's so bad to stop doing that.
Okay, so it was referring to you when we were talking about the old people bothering... Young children.
Actually, I'm not like those nosy advisors. Mm-hmm. I'm much of a moderate person.
That's the point. That's what all the adults think, that they are not the nosy advisors.
Exactly. Because we have always been, all of us have been there, you know? We know how the story goes. We shouldn't react to them with so much of pressure. Mm-hmm. Because then they would never come to us, and then they would never listen to us. And after a certain level, they would not respect us even. You know what I mean? Whatever we say is going to lose its meaning. And if you say something a million times, then there would be no value for the thing you're saying, even if it's right.
Yeah, but for a fact, we all know that we, at some point of time, we have to seek advice from our adults. You know, as mentioned in the narratives as well, like, we have to seek advice from the adults, like someone who knows better than us and someone who's been experienced.
You know, it has got a condition. Mm-hmm. They must have the language at first, then they must know the truth, because mm-hmm. maybe they're judging me.
Yeah.
Maybe they do not know the whole truth, and what they are saying is just based on a conclusion they have made on an illusion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Like for this, for this, I don't think there's a special, a specific standard for this. Like, it depends upon the
situation.
For
advising?
No, I mean, you know, someone being wrong or right on this.
Yes.
So, like, there's not a specific standard. Like, it depends upon the situation. Sometimes what happens is, you know...
And we should consider the fact that we're not the one who's going to dispense hell and heaven.
Yeah, and, like, someone, a youth, consider a young boy, he wants to do something, mm-hmm. but then his elder sibling or his uncle, someone comes, you're too young for this, I know better than you, you mm-hmm. shouldn't do this. Whereas, like, he has done a whole lot of research on that, and he has reached to a certain point that where he thinks that, you know, doing this is better for him.
Yes.
So without, you know, actually studying what he's trying to do, mm-hmm. you know, the adults come and advise him.
Exactly.
And he thinks, like, you know, over here, they're just getting nosy. And
you know, I told you, it does have a condition. You should follow specific rules. Even in Islam, we have that when you are going to have advice for someone, mm-hmm. firstly, be so kind. That's the first thing. Because kindness is the common language between all people. Mm-hmm. Even if there is a very stubborn child, if you talk to them with kindness, mm-hmm. then they would be attracted to you. And after a while, maybe they would follow you as a role model. Mm-hmm. So you have to be kind at first.
Yeah.
Then consider the situation they are in. How they say it, they say, before putting yourself into their shoes, mm-hmm. do not judge them.
Yeah.
So at first, see, as a young person, what they are doing and why they are doing it. Mm. Perhaps they do not have enough of information. Try to clarify the situation for them and then try to guide them in a way that is much like unconscious way. Mm. You know, there are some certain ways that you do teach people about good things, but you do not say it directly.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, I do not like someone lying to me, then I don't lie.
Yeah.
If as an adult I lie myself, then I could not consider my youngsters not to lie to me.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
we are in Youth Station and we're talking about the advices.
Yeah. Like if I plan to do something, choose a specific field to study.
Mm-hmm.
So like I have done my research on it. I have completed my homework.
Well, that's very common. It happens to many people.
Yeah. So now I seek advice from the, you know, experts in that particular field. And, you know, I ask like what's good for me and what's better for me. So over here, I'm seeking advice from adults, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, this is a stage where you need to seek advice. You need to
also, there might
others.
Be some people who advise you in a wrong way because they have not been successful in the major they have picked. They would advise you to go for another major that they have loved to pick.
No, I mean, you need to discuss it with someone who has already experienced
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
So you don't know that. You should know the consequences of it,
mm-hmm.
like the good side of it and the bad side of it.
Exactly.
So now you have done your homework and now you decide to opt for that field. But, you know, so there's some random old man coming and he's like, you know, just don't do it, I know better, you know.
Yeah.
What I do is at these times,
as for me, I would never look back to that person again.
No, as for me, what I do is, you know, when I feel like, oh man, come on, now this this guy is getting nosy and he's like,
yes.
you know, just he's getting inquisitive and he's trying to interfere.
You ignore
I just keep quiet, I just stay calm and I'll ignore him. When he goes away, I carry on with my work.
Exactly. That's true. That's what I'm telling you. You know, the elder people have to notice this very fact that sometimes after a specific point, when your word does not make any difference, mm-hmm. then you stop saying that because maybe what you're saying is just annoying.
Yeah.
And it does not make any change. It does not have any value for the person you're talking to. You have to change perhaps your way, you have to say it in another format in a way that it does make change or you convey your meaning in a better way.
Yeah, but not forgetting that every coin has got two sides.
Exactly.
So here this youth, this youngster, mm-hmm. he might be correct on this side and the old man who is advising him, he might be wrong.
Yes.
But sometimes, many times it happens that the youngster, he's trying to do something which might be harmful for him.
Uh-huh, yes.
He, over here, and here, a responsible
that.
Adult. Like, if we put ourselves in the place of adults for our younger siblings or for our younger brothers and
just
sisters.
Just imagine a parent who has a teenager boy or girl.
Yeah, so over here, so he wants to do something which might actually be harmful for him. The person, he comes and he advises him. And now what the young child again thinks, he's just getting nosy.
Mm-hmm.
The elders, they know more than us.
Uh-huh, yes.
So to avoid this, what we can do is, you know, there should be a particular way. So, you know, we should be able to convince him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we should show him the right path. Like, we should tell him about the consequences. We should explain to him the whole thing. If you just say, just don't do it, of course he's going to take you wrong.
You know,
just tell him the reason why he shouldn't do it.
Yes, yes. We were talking for the youth. Now, another point which is against them is that sometimes they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And without going through any assumption, they do something which is going to harm them, as you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Their parents, the adult people that are around them are going to give them some advices and they do not pay any attention to it. Which is going to lead nowhere. If we want to say it in general, you have to consider the person who is advising you.
Yeah.
And listen to what they say. If that is logical, if that has got some points that would add into your knowledge, then don't be so biased about advice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's going to help you a lot more than it might harm you.
Mm-hmm.
So just some minutes of listening to an experienced person who does need a good for you is good.
Being a good listener or listening to some advices is not a bad thing.
Exactly.
You know, you can be a good listener. There's no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But only when you have that ability to make decisions after that, where you can, you know, you can identify the right and the wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just don't have to accept everything you hear.
Exactly. That's the point. You listen to every single thing. And we have it in our Islamic hadith also, or it's a verse from the Holy Quran that says, "Man yastama'una al-qawl fayattaba'una ahsana."
And listen to different opinions and go for the best one.
Exactly. So we have to listen, but it's not going to bother you. For some minutes, you listen to a person and then you pick the best thing you have heard. and listened about.
Here you have to be smart.
Yes, yes. You have to be very intelligent in order to find out between the good and the bad, which is good and which is bad. It's going to do you a lot of benefits. We are in Youth Station, and we're talking about the advices that are not very much always good, but we have to listen to different opinions and then to pick the best one. So also we have a saying that says the worst vice is advice, you know? The worst vice is advice. The wrongest thing you could do is advice. Because people always react to advices like in a very biased way. But it is not good. We say it that some elderly are very much annoying in the way they are going to tell us some advices. But it's going to be unfair if we say all of it is wrong. All of what they say is wrong. After all, they're experienced people and they know something maybe that would do some benefits to us.
Yeah, they could be, because there could be different results. Like you have done this, you reach to a certain result, and if someone else has, does it, he reaches to a different result. And many times, you know, if you're talking about specifically about advices, sometimes I feel like there's a lack of advice. You know, you don't advise at a point where you have to.
That's like, also another side of the story.
Like when you see someone doing something wrong, or you just see someone who can do better with your advice, you don't advise it there.
Because you had a history, perhaps. You have seen people who do not listen to your advice. Then you say, okay, why do I have to do it? Then I just skip it. Even if it is good, I'm not going to do it. Like what we see nowadays, you know, people are not interacting with each other in the way of giving advices. I would think, it's none of my business. Why do I have to advise them? After all, they're not going to listen to me. While what I'm going to advise them is going to be beneficial for them, but they're not listening. So that's also is another side of the story, which is, dangerous as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, dear audience, for staying with us. So that's all the time we had for today. So the conclusion, we were talking about, you know, advice and, you know, the adults, sometimes advising the youngsters or the youth. So they become nosy sometimes. So here, like we said that, you know, for the one who is advising, he has to figure out the situation where he needs to advise and where he does not have to. And the one who is listening to the pieces of advice, so for them, we said that listen, there's no problem
be
in
patient.
Listening.
Yeah, be patient. Give some listening and then make
just listen to different opinions and just choose the best one.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you for listening.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAT 5 and via the internet Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.